Okay, I think that's the end of that track. Welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the craziest place on earth.
That is awesome music there, Chad. Who are these Secret Chiefs? Now, Secret Chiefs 3, that would be me, J.W., and Carolyn, which was a theme in yesterday's interview with Randy Moggins about what we're doing, you know, in the secret level. So that's appropriate. And it says, welcome to the Teatron Animatronique. So, Chad, what's this environment we're hearing?
This Secret Chief is a band led by Trace Bruins, and he was a member of the band Faith No More. I don't know if you remember them in the 90s, Mike Patton's band. Yeah.
Yep.
And they've been around, Secret Chiefs 3 has been around since 95. They kind of come together occasionally, and they have a really great stage performance where it seems really improvisational. It's almost like a Zappa concert, and they include a lot of different instruments from different musical cultures around the world, a lot of Eastern stuff, and a lot of the themes behind their music are inspired by, well, the name itself, Secret Chiefs. Like Wikipedia says, Secret Chiefs are said to be transcendent cosmic authorities, a spiritual hierarchy responsible for the operation moral caliber of the cosmos. So
that's us.
Yeah, I thought it was appropriate given the, like you just said, Bob, the Bob, Carolyn, and JW triad.
Right. What it is that's a bunch of concepts there. That's the Rye principle. We're going to dismantle that. We know how to dismantle that hierarchy. So that puts us in the control that controls control position. Because we're not, and you could only do that now if you didn't want to control the situation, which is the rationale.
Right from the day one, well, Bob has always said there is no spiritual hierarchy, and then Ion came to complete that statement.
Yes. Yeah, now I just want to say, so Carolyn's listening on streaming because it's better reception, so she's a couple of minutes behind us. I had a great time on the break watching her just listening because I knew she hasn't heard, I don't know if she's ever heard this, but I knew when we started screaming that she'd just crack up, and of course she did. She was rolling on the floor as she listened to us, me and Ian Arlett. Now it's interesting, Ian Arlett was a good friend back then, and he actually became a substitute godfather for Chad. No, what am I saying? There I got to make that. For my foster son. When I wasn't around, Ian would fill in. But I'm thinking Chad looks like my foster son. So for a minute, I thought he was your foster father, Chad. But anyways, it was my father. That's Ian. And Carolyn later says, how many people were in the studio? I said, just me and Ian. She's, holy shit, sounds like 100 people there screaming.
Yeah. It sounds like Bob and Bob Thugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob Thugs, did you say?
Yeah, it sounds like you have a bunch of thugs in the studio waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ian, Ian is a big thug. He was my bodyguard. He came down every week to protect me during the show. And this is, you know, 9 months later, so he'd been protecting me for 9 months. So he was a common feature, big, thuggish guy. You wouldn't want to tangle with him. And what's funny there, we get a little argument just before we release the statistics, the votes. So he and I start arguing over something. He wants to get Michael dressed up as a sequined, cliche. and you're here, just listen to the note. Like, we're arguing, you know, we said break out into a fight, and then I say, okay, we're not going to have any of that. Get out, let's move. Typical master-slave fight, you know what I mean? Or butler-master fight right there. And but what also amazes me is I said I'm going to release the secret files of the Book of Revelation.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And I don't know what the heck I was thinking. I don't know what. I had no clue. I think I'm a good example.
So when you said that, that was just some random thing that just snuck out.
And I was just going to explain, James, I think I'm a conscious medium. I think, and one psychic, he's actually a crazy psychic, he's part of the Montauk group, I forget his name, Cameron somebody, Duncan Cameron, he met me and freaked out meeting me, and he said, you know, Bob's a psychic but doesn't know it. Okay, I don't think I'm the traditional kind of channeling psychic, I'm a conscious medium, so I actually know I'm a conscious medium. And I have no idea what I'm going to say before I say it. You know, it just starts coming out. So there's some kind of intuition going on there, a little beyond me. Now, remember, Ion explained a few weeks ago that I live a bit ahead of the now. So that might be a way of describing the xenophony of it. I'm ahead of the now. You know, I'm just a little ahead. So I must be ahead of myself and figure out what I'm going to say, then I say it. But I'm not aware of my awareness of that. I don't know.
This is like bringing up a lot of memories with Walter when I used to sit in front of his door. Right after I got on the phone with you, he'd pull out a notebook and start asking me questions about you. He'd ask questions. What did he say? What were your impressions of that? And then he pulls out the DSM-4 and starts telling you that this guy is a fucking crazy son of a bitch.
He tried to classify me according to the psychiatric manual.
Yeah, the DSM-4. Yeah, and then like maybe a week later, Bob's a genius. Bob's a genius. What is the matter with you two? I'm like, he'd go on, and then every time I talked, he'd pull and start taking notes again.
Yeah, he would rely on you as a probe. He wouldn't ask me or didn't want to give. He wouldn't want to admit that he was actually studying me that much. You know what I mean? So he would get you to ask the question, just talk to me, and then try to get you to tell him what
I
said.
Yeah, I remember I said, so what did he say? Well, Bob told me, he says, hey, he's in L.A., and he goes, let's go do stuff. And I'm like, what do you mean, go do stuff? And then I told Walter, that's what he said, go do stuff. And he took his pad of paper and he threw it across the room like, what?
Another wasted phone call.
No, he just was like so all over the place. He was so funny.
Hey, James, we found recently there was, when we met personally, physically, in February 2005, I came to L.A., I was on Evan Ray's show, and a guy, Eli Elliott, filmed me all around L.A. on radio in different scenes. Well, we go to, there's a section where we're at the Finnegan's Wake Society of Los Angeles, or of Venice, that I and Jerry Fialka formed in 1995. And guess who's there in the footage? You're sitting beside me, and Walter is beside you, and we're going to Finney's Wake, which you knew nothing about and didn't even know understand what the group was probably. So I'm talking. The footage he has is I'm explaining my xenocrony. And, James, you're right beside to left me, and you're looking at me like I'm a fucking insane piece of shit.
Because you got to understand, I'm like, before you show up, I've already been, like, sewage has been pouring into my ears and shit and piss about you for a long time and rage fest.
And so here's what you're doing. You'll get to see this when we get it up on the website. You're looking at me, puzzled, pissed off, like, this guy, I'm explaining how Hollywood movies are about me, you know what I mean? And you're part of Hollywood, you say, what is this guy? And you keep looking over at Walter to see how Walter's taking this, and Walter's there taking notes, taking it very seriously, and you're looking back and forth. You're going back and forth about, look at Bobby's, and Walter's fucking believing this guy. Like, you know, it's priceless when you see
right
this.
Right before that, we spent a lot of time determining what we're going to do with Hollywood, and I was reporting into him all the time about meeting with directors, producers, explaining exactly what's really going on behind the scenes and how stuff gets done, and he just couldn't believe it. He just was freaked out with all the stories. He would take notes. So that would make sense, because he was like planning. We're planning to do something.
Yes.
When we went to the AFI, we went over there, and we met with all the top dogs over at the AFI.
Is that after you met Oliver Stone, which happened a few years earlier? Because this is after Walter has gone to San Francisco and was in the hospital for a year.
This is before Oliver Stone.
Oh, okay. You're leading before up to it.
Yeah, because he was in his... When he was dealing with you, he's in pulling out the DSM-4 and DSM-5, and he was going to write a screenplay called Tales of the DSM-4 or something like that. And he was in the big psychiatry diagnostic mode, and it was right after that, soon around that time, I remember, as we went and met with Stone, and I just was like freaked out about the whole thing that happened in that room with Stone and what Walter did. And Stone, nobody knows what the hell's going on with that guy. Okay, you can be talking to him and he won't even be there. He's
right. Now Walter's analyzing me and saying that I'm a nut or need to be studied as a nut, and he's acting out as an extreme nut when he meets with the Hollywood heavies. He's the nut. Walter's the nut.
he was yelling at Stone, and then I was clapping at him. Sinji goes, James, you talk to him. And I'm like, so, and I start talking to him. And then, that would make sense. It would meet that place where he met up. That footage would be pretty accurate. Yeah, it's totally.
Oh, it's priceless. God. It's your first encounter with me. And right. It's right there on the camera. So people may be wondering why we're talking about this. A couple people now tell me they realize they're younger, the next generation, like Leon, I think it is, and a bunch of other guys. They're in their 20s and that. And they say, man, no, Randy Moggins was telling me how important Board is. You know, as history, as time, as duration goes on, the shadows of the real guys, you know, start getting larger. Well, Bowart's looming larger more and more for the later generations. And so that's why this footage is important.
Oh,
I mean, that's why this whole thing we're doing, what Chad's showing here, Chad's like the next generation, it's pretty phenomenal. It's like it's like stretching public incredulity what I'm claiming here with these examples.
Yeah, and it's showing where the seeds were planted.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Because I was right in the middle of these two, like, major mind fucks going at it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like you were between Picasso and Duchamp or Stravinsky.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
And Von Berg or something. Webern. But anyway, so, Chad, do you have a comment on any of that, that one we heard? I would say this, Chad. Before you say that, I don't think anybody has screamed a victory yell or a release as long as we did, ever. I don't think anybody's cheered two people, you know, about something so obscure, screaming your heads off for like 2 minutes of an orgasm. I think that's a unique soundbite. It should be sampled by rappers and everybody all the time.
Yeah, it was very primal. It was like a primal scream.
Yeah,
but, it's like you said, after thousands of years of work, that'd be like opening the coffin. Of a pharaoh or something that had been down there for thousands of years, you know, and the smell that it gives off might make you scream like that or something. But,
you definitely know what it
let out some sounds that I haven't heard out of a human being before.
You know, it's like Ion says, what are they going to find underneath the Sphinx? They're going to find a box and they're going to open up and it's going to say Dobbstown.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, do you want to, we've got Yuri that's been a hold for about 10 minutes here. And,
okay, let's hear from Yuri.
Yuri, bring it on up, front and center.
Hey, guys, what's up? I'm a little behind on what you've been talking about, but fill me in. What's going on?
Well, that's not good.
Bob, say.
We're gonna, I mean, we've been
really?
Doing it. If you don't know what's going on, you've got to know what's happening, and we can't be trying to update you. So go back and start listening to the next clip. Have you heard any of the clips we played?
Oh my gosh! No! I actually just called in, so yeah.
It's critical. Like, you got to go back. You got to go
back. Oh,
more so than any other day, you're really going to be lost if you don't hear the first couple clips.
Yeah, just call back. You'll thank us.
Yeah, go. Hey, James, tell them to go sit in the audience, and you're going to stay in the audience for a little bit and get to find out what's going on before you can come on stage.
Yeah.
It's so boring back there. It's all quiet, you know. No one talks to each other.
Well, you've missed. You don't know what's happened. See, okay, you're
there's
in
a reason
room.
Why
okay,
they're
cancel.
Quiet. They're meditating on what you just laid out.
Take a break.
You're
okay, Chad, what's the next item?
You're
next analogy. Item is a clip from, it's only 21 days after the election results were announced, and the reason why I picked this next clip is because Bob starts to release his files that he's promised to release once he's elected. And some of the themes he covers in here are very intimately related with Ionic themes of parallel world traveling. The term fire and brimstone comes into play. So I think it's pretty appropriate.
Okay, let's hear it. This is March 23rd. This is 3 weeks later.
Yeah, three weeks after Bob wins the Secret Council of Ten chairman position.
Oh, I should say this. We were talking about the Church Subgenius in the first interview in 1987. Now, the Church Subgenius mythology dogma is that the Exodus, these great aliens, are going to come on July 5th, 1998, and save one-third of humanity who are subgeniuses, two-thirds of humanity are pinks, and they're gone. Exactly what Ion says. You know, the most of the masses will die and go to the GUP. And those,
but it's specifically exactly what Ion says, because from the Book of Revelations, we're one-third of
that's right.
the people that
yeah.
are going to be here.
Right. So here, now, Zhang is projecting in the early 80s, that'll be July 5th, 1998, I claim that the X has come in February 88 when I start playing the Evergreens on the radio. And I say that's the Exodus. And I don't know if I started playing it right then, but that's the theme. I claim that early February 8, the Exodus come, so that 1998 is happening 10 years earlier due to McLuhan's rule of we have lived 200 years every 12 months. So it is 1998, at least in February 1988. So they came, I made the contact, and then that allowed me to release the phone number a few weeks later and then win. It's after the Exodus have landed. See, that's important. In this thing.
But really, though, Bob, in 1988, when you get elected and then you start releasing your own private files, the secret files, that's
yeah.
actually when you start exposing the mystery landscape.
Right. A good point. Yeah, I'm acting out what Ion's going to do, like a John the Baptist or something.
Huh. Yeah, exactly. John the Baptist role. You're setting the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All right, I'm going to read a file. This is from 1983, about early 83, at a Secret Council of Ten meeting. I was present, and you know, this question came up. One of the members, it might have been Prince Charles, might have been Tarantash, said, "Bob, why, when the Bigfoot is sighted, you know, those Yeti, the Bigfoot, Doug, when they're
sighted..." They had another sighting last week.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay. Did they talk about the incredible stench that accompanies
his presence? No, Bigfoot print.
Oh, okay, because there's an incredible odor, and so the council tent asked Bob, why does Bigfoot have an incredible stench when encountered? And this is what I'm reading from the files, the archive. This is what Bob answered. Bob indicated that this is a sulfur smell, this odor. He indicated that this is also referred to as the smell of fire and brimstone in the ancient writings, the brimstone being sulfur, and the fire being the heat which ignites or produces this stench from the sulfur. Bob indicated that this fire and brimstone is a purifier, that it is often used for purposes of fumigating. He indicated that this particular odor associated with this entity, Bigfoot, not Dave Fanning, is brought about through its action of transmuting itself from one dimension to another. Can you imagine that? Bigfoot, when he transmutes, creates this alchemical stench. Bob indicated that it itself, that to Bigfoot itself, it has no odor, but to those who are not used to the odor of brimstone, like Dave Fanning, the smell is that of a stench. Bob indicated that the smell, or any smell, is in actuality a frequency or vibration, just as light and sound are frequencies and vibrations within a particular range. But the eyes do not necessarily pick up, and the hearing mechanism do not necessarily pick up the smell or see what is giving off the smell, but the nose itself has a mechanism for tuning to that frequency of transmutation of interdimensional movement. Bob indicated that with certain frequencies, entities and pinks even could create artificial odors. Bob indicated that in the case of the frequencies of sulfur or fire and brimstone combinations, the frequencies involved are those which are also associated with the MIBs, the MIBs, the Men in Black, and those of the Ariman forces. This is a new word for people listening to my show. Ariman, the original Black Illuminati, the original progenitor of that pink prison we're victims of now. As a matter of fact, Dave Fanning was working with those Ariman forces way back there in the millennia of the dark, dismal acoustic space before visual space lit up the abyss. So Bob indicated that the Bigfoot creatures are essentially slaves or servants to these Ariman forces, these Black Illuminati. However, they are not permitted to cause harm to humans, pinks, and subgeniuses, pinks included, except if directed to do so by the Ariman forces. Bob indicates that the Yeti or the Bigfoot types are karmically bound as slaves to the Ariman forces for activities in their past. And this is not in the file, but one of the activities was those entities, those pinks who blew up Atlantis and blew up Maldek before that planet, you know, that Kepler predicted was around in the elliptical discovery of orbits. Now, when these things were blown up, incredible karma, and those entities, those pinks, even some subgeniuses were reincarnated as Yeti and Bigfoot as slaves of the Ariman forces. because of these activities in their past and can only be redeemed and freed from their bondage to these Ariman forces, these pink forces, when the rest of humanity, which includes the subgenii, has risen to a high enough stage of civilization or spiritual development so as to overcome the limitations placed upon them by material bondage. In other words, when they make Bob the slack king, the slack woman, the slack queen, the slack animal, the slack ape of the coming times. In other words, when we believe, when we've actualized that moment, that mythic time zone, then the Yeti will be released from their imprisonment, their karmic enslavement, and we will be able to stand the stench. We will revel in it. Maybe that's what Marlon Brando was trying to tell us in Last Tango in Paris, in the isolated vacuum he was operating with his little Bobby girl. Remember that?
So, and the butter.
The butter.
The high cholesterol diet.
No, butter is yellow. It's not pink.
Yes.
Butter. Yellow is the other color for Bob. I used it during Christmas last year. All right, this is not bad music. I don't want to talk about the files anymore. That's enough noise for the day, Doug. Now, what time is it?
It's 5:59 and 21 seconds.
We got a couple of minutes there, Doug. Bring up something that you know is niggling. You've been niggling away there in your work state, daily activity, in your employment. What did you really want to say it? But say it, Doug. Ask Bob. What? Ask Bob something that you really want to know, Doug, other than you're feeling good. Why? You know why.
I'm feeling good, Bob. What do I want to ask Bob?
Come on, think back. We'll take a little pause here. The music's covering it. Just think back. What was something that... In the period when you didn't know that I was Bob, you know, what was that synchronistic niggling question? You sexy thing, Dougie.
I don't know, Bob.
I see you now. That see when you
but
found
see, you answered one of my questions, and I answered one of my questions myself for you once.
Yeah.
That you passed on to another subgenii.
Oh, yes.
A daughter of Bob.
I want to bring that up. I did want to bring that up to people out there, subgenii and pinks. Listen to this. Doug is special because he's had the privilege of associating with Bob and Connie's kids. Doug has worked out with Bob's. We won't give out a name at this point.
I went to RoboCop with Bob's kid.
Yeah, so, RoboCop.
And RoboDoc?
Yes, RoboDoc. Doctors for Bob. So, Doug, let's hear. Let's hope that Doug comes back again and shares his experience and knowledge he's learned and absorbed, not with the kids of Frank Zappa, but with the kids of Bob, those little twins that Connie and Bob produced way back in college days. Yes, those kids Doug went to a movie with. So, Dougie, Bob bless you, praise Doug, and let's move on with some smack-inducing music.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, you've
I
got the perfect soundtrack.
What?
You got the perfect soundtrack in the background. Who was that? Yuri? Is that you?
Yeah, I was just singing to the song. Sorry.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Hold it, Yuri. You relax. Don't say anything yet. Let's forget the responses of the elders. First of all, James, you asked about the music?
No, I said that's the perfect soundtrack for you.
Yeah.
I listened to that while you're doing your long diatribe, and in the background, it's very faintly, it's playing the entire time. The whole way through.
Yeah, like...
You really are
trying to seduce the other guy, Doug.
Yeah, Mike Dyer, his role while I'd be talking to college now, he'd mix music or just whatever sound effects. He'd have it coming, being underneath as a current. And it would, the synchronicity would be incredible. Like, I'd be saying something to a caller about the river. And all of a sudden, under Mike's, what Mike's playing underneath, you hear Mississippi. You know, it just would sink in on another level. Or by another force, tachyonic maybe, but the synchronicities of those undercurrent utterings would always often mesh with whatever I was improvising with a caller. That was incredible. And then the other joke here is that was Doug Nicholson, who would sub in for Mike Dyer when Mike couldn't make him. Now, the irony of me being claiming this is the church of some genius or whatever is that Reverend Ivan Stang, the head guy in the church, his real name is Doug St. Clair Smith. Now, we were living on St. Clair Avenue in Toronto at the time, but aside from that, he's Doug. So all this time that I'm talking to Doug Nicholson, I'm addressing him as Doug, and the subgenius, the enemies of me in Toronto, would take the show and send it to Stang. So he had to put up with me saying, Doug, Doug this, Doug that. I was addressing him directly by coincidence.
God.
So that's the interesting role of Doug Nicholson. Now what?
I just want to say something. The other big theme that was in that clip was the brimstone.
Yes.
Brimstone is sulfur, and sulfur is one of the main ingredients in the Realign tablets.
That's so, right. We learned a lot about sulfur. Karen did a lot of typing in the rewrite sessions. Ian did a lot on sulfur. Was listening to that, I was remembering this. What those, now here you have to imagine, this is an administrative meeting, 1983, I'm not anywhere near in a power position, and I'm just one of the underlings, and we're discussing who we're going to assassinate, what economy we're going to collapse, you know, typical solar government activities, you know, millions would die from what we were deciding, and they asked me to explain this, and you have to realize that what I was saying was like nuts to them. You know what I mean? They asked me something about the Bigfoot. Not this rant I do, and I'm reading from the minutes. I mean, like they're saying, well, who is this guy? Where did this guy come from? Like, you have to understand. Take your Godfather. What if little Freddie and the Godfather started spouting off like this in one of their serious meetings about how they're going to hit the mattresses and who they're going to kill? That's what's so funny about this. It's a huge put-on that I'm doing to the guys.
You just drive everybody nuts wherever you go.
Yeah.
It's been going on your whole life. Great. Good. Real good.
So, Chad, that was great. That was fun to hear that. And again, I was like channeling on a weird level there.
Yeah, through all those old CKLN shows, occasionally you go into the, like, that hushed, kind of subdued voice.
Yeah,
the whispering voice. And you use that really, like, sort of smooth out your words longer. And it's almost, is that where you feel like you're going into the conscious mediumship?
Yeah, that's probably the most mundane, the lowest version of it, and I'm aware of it. Yes, I that's the one where I start whispering to Mike, and I'm totally aware that I'm whispering, and I'm just prompted to do it. So that would be the other times I'm not aware of it. I'm just saying the words, but this excited one was maybe another version of that. I mean, I would just go nuts, you know, and Mike wouldn't even know this was going to happen. This is what was funny. I'd be watching his face as I was doing this, and that was a great pleasure watching him try to figure out, wait, where's Bob going with this? So he would distract himself by playing undercurrent music. So what was that ending song? What was the title? The lyric? I can't remember it right now.
You sexy want to thing, but that's...
Oh, yeah, you sexy thing. Right, right, right.
Yeah, that was a huge disco hit. So
and in a way, I was being sexy with my husky voice. You know, I was being a rhetorician.
It's a total party song.
So I guess now, okay, since Yuri heard that, now we can ask Yuri for his response.
Oh, no, give him a break.
I'm sorry now, because the quality of the whole piece was like a little bit, you know, messy for me to come like really connect, to kind of flow with.
Right.
But it's just like at the end of it, it's just like the song just like stood out. I was like, oh my God, I know that song. So as soon as you mentioned that, like, you know, you're trying to be all, like, you know, sexy and suave and stuff, you know, like, you know, working with the song, was like, oh, okay, I see what Bob is trying to do. All right. But
well, what that was the end of the show, Yuri. We always called it the church hymn. So I would bring in some song. You never know what it was going to be, like we do on this show. I'd bring in something, and that the show would end with the church hymn. So that was the church hymn for that week. And we didn't know what was going to happen during the show. So we didn't know whether the song would be appropriate or not. But that seemed to be appropriate based on the way I was mouthing. I was saying my words as if I was doing cunnilingus or something there.
It was really smooth. But one thing stood out to me in a big way, too. The whole I kept hearing Bigfoot throughout, you know, like the discussion, and it kind of threw me back to something I heard about Bigfoot maybe like a couple of days ago about the story of Gilgamesh and Enkidu, and how Enkidu is kind of like Bigfoot or Yeti is kind of like the entity or kind of like, I guess, like the, you know, in a kind of like the vessel of Enkidu, in a way. I'm not really too sure, but like, can you expand on that a little bit, if you know anything about it?
Well, it's a big story, and I say go and read a book by William Raymond Thompson called Coming Into Being. He writes a lot about the Gilgamesh-Enkidu myth, and he goes into a lot of these themes you're just touching on, and that's not the place for me to even begin to talk about it, but I'll give you the source. Read William Raymond Thompson on it. I mean, Sasha had bought the book Coming Into Being. Maybe this will prompt her to read this section now.
Interesting.
Okay, so, Chad, what's next?
Okay, next is a shorter clip, and Bob lays out... I should just play it. There's no need to introduce it, but it's a funny clip. But it's also has a lot of truth to it, so I guess that's why it's funny. So let me just start it, and then you can figure it out.
Yeah.
To the subgenius?
Yeah,
right?
Introduce me.
We haven't done that.
We're just so casual and
so slack.
Yeah, it's a midnight hour.
And I catch myself, and I realize I haven't introduced you. The man sitting across from me is J.R. Bob Dobbs of the Church of the Subgenius. And my name is Mike, and we're here until 2 o'clock. We're here for another...
And Bob's here as long as he can.
Another 15 minutes or so.
Twenty-two minutes.
I'm flexible, Bob.
Yeah. The point is, I'm a remarkable person, and that's why I'm part of your show. And I do have an opening item which should be of real interest to everybody, and you too, Mike.
Lay it on me, Bob.
Yeah, what happened is that the Guinness Book of Records got in touch with me.
Recently?
Yeah, they called me up, called my office, and they've heard of my boasts. And they know I claim to be the happiest man, the most slack-filled person who ever lived in history. You know, the happiest person who ever will live and did live. They heard about that. So they want to see if my claim is accurate. So they're going to come over to my place and monitor my lifestyle for a week, maybe 22 days, 3 weeks.
Sure.
They're going to monitor me. And if I pass all their standards of what they think happiness is, then I am going to be declared the happiest man who ever did live and will live.
So people at Guinness always need some sort of proof. I mean, if you sit in a wheelchair for 180 days, you have to have that proof.
Yeah.
So this is what they're doing in your case.
So in my case, they have to see how I interact with normal daily stresses and joys and pleasures of life. And so they'll be monitoring all my life with Connie. And I'm going to let them do that. I know that I'm monitored anyway, so it's no invasion of my privacy. And I know that those guys are probably going to be so ecstatic around me, they'll probably... publish the results, chuck the book, and want to be parts of my church and forget about the, you know, this encyclopedic effort of the world records job.
So a couple of British oligarchs are going to come over and hang around. They may be coming down to see Kelly at some point.
They may come in, They may, it may be part of your course. They'll have to monitor to be
over
on
23
the
days. They're going to hit one Wednesday at least.
Yeah. All right, so we can look forward to that, eh? See if I pass the test to support my boat.
That's exciting, Bob.
Yeah.
Nice to know I'm a part of that.
You'll be given honors to be associated with.
You know, I've met many chuckles to you over the last year.
You
so.
Made me very happy, Mike.
I can tell that guy's like, who the fuck is this guy? He's really, really out there.
Now, Ion has made that claim about Bob several times, that Bob's the happiest man that ever lived.
And I totally forgot that, Chad, all about that. And you know what happened to the Guinness? The guys, they never finished the project because they were assassinated in a shootout about a week later. They buried them.
What? You wanted to keep that a secret or something?
Yeah, I kept a secret. I didn't. See, they... I don't know how the Guinness Book of Records does it, but like people can start their own projects, you know, and create their own scene. So the editors of Guinness Book of Records didn't even know that these guys were doing this, I don't think. And so we never told, so we didn't tell anybody that they were gone, and nobody asked us, nobody called up, said, where were these guys? So we got away with it. We got away with murdering them, or, well, you know, burying them. I didn't murder them, but they got caught in the crossfire when I was having a battle. And what is the date of that recording?
That one is 1988, August the 10th.
Okay, so that is, I'm Secret Council 10, but I don't really pull it off. Look at the movie Natural Born Killers by Oliver Stone. That's the way it was for me and Carolyn from 1977 to 1990, and I've said this many, many times through the years. There still was skirmishes, you know, like the Japanese soldier still thinks World War II is going in 1970. There were still skirmishes happening in 88, 89 until 90, especially until the wall went down in November 89. So there was people taking pot shots at me, and those guys got killed. So we just buried them and hope no one noticed, and no one did.
We got full confessionals going tonight.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you have Chad remembering that Ion said that. That's incredible. That's I totally forgot about Ion. I mean, I suppressed all that. I didn't want to remember that. So I claimed it, and it gets proven 22 years later. Or 2019. What is that, Chad? Yeah, 21 years later. It's all the completion of 21 moving into 22. See, that's the cycle there. Because basically, I go on June 87, and then 22 years later, in 2009, is when Ion shows up. So that's part of the meaning of 22, this cycle of the end of the beginning that's happening when Ion shows up. What?
Wow, that's amazing. Sorry.
Yeah.
It just blew my
mind. That's
what
we've been talking about this whole time, Yuri, is how 22 years ago, Bob started sowing the seeds. 22 years from the beginning of when Ion showed up, Bob started sowing the seeds for everything that Ion laid out over the last three years.
A quarter of a century. That's a quarter of a century ago. 25 years now.
Wow. That's the sexiest way of living I've ever heard, man.
Yeah.
That is sexy. Awesome.
Yeah, it's like people record themselves, Andy Warhol's app, and they go around taping events, and then they put it into their artworks. Well, I've got it. Nobody cared, and I kept a record. I taped all these shows to prove that I was predicting what was going to happen, not what did happen.
Right.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
And the funny, the humor, you have to realize the humor of it is, it's like Ion says, to be on the leading edge, there's no crowd on the leading edge of creation. There I was doing this, and, you know, three people were regulars, you know, you have to realize how fucking tiny this thing is.
Wow. Yeah, the same three people call in every week and leave messages on the answering machine.
That's right. And George is one of the most creative guys. He's the guy who goes on a bit. His message was about, are the polls closed? He was always very creative. Now, George, one day, he came over. He hung around. He'd come down, and we became friends. And his big thing is he'd gone to India to see the whack job parade in India. You know that festival where everybody dresses up weird and the zombies walk around?
Is that called the Whack Job Festival, Bob?
Yeah. All Hallows Eve, all Whack Jobs Eve, you know, it's their Halloween. And the famous New York poet Ira Cohen, or Beatnik poet, he filmed them. So he had this footage, and then, so George witnessed this this event. So he was showing me some of the footage, we talked about it. So one day I lent him the Frank Zappa interview, the transcript, which would have been in early 89, it'd probably been transcribed and typed up by Carolyn's secretary, because that interview was done in October 88. And he read it, and then he brought it back, and I said, what do you think of it? And he made a dismissive remark. I immediately kicked him out of the house and never spoke to him again. He got fired from Dobbstown for a bad opinion on the Zappa interview. So I was a harsh ruler there on the aesthetics level. If this guy couldn't appreciate that interview, then why am I talking to him? And he was very upset, and he keeps making these very creative. I give it to him. He kept calling in anyways. He'd been banned, but he keeps calling in, leaving very funny and often the best, most creative messages for the next couple of years. even though he had no more access to me. So that's the only time you could say I made a decision in the art world or in aesthetics or in, you know, some kind of, I don't care what people
think.
Isn't
that the only decision you've ever made in your life, Bob?
It could be, because for some reason I just, there was something a little off by him, didn't know what it was, and then when he said that he didn't appreciate the Zap interview, that was very insulting. Now, I'm just thinking now that Chad, you said my music had a bigger effect than Zappa. Maybe he was not impressed with Zappa because he was more impressed with me. Maybe that's what was going on there.
Yeah, you might have kicked out your biggest fan. Maybe he was like a militant Bobite, and he was going to off Zappa for not being as good as you.
Right, but he showed good tenure or whatever it is, tenor of character by staying in there and creating and putting great voice messages. I recommend that if you go to my timeline, listen to the November 27th, 1990 show, because I'd just been on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation on November 22nd, and everybody, all three people in Toronto were so excited that I got national coverage that they were just phoning in crazy messages. And that message, we'd start off the show, James, and the message would go for 35 minutes before we started talking.
Jesus, 35? Wow.
Yeah, phone messages. And what happened, I was just reminding Carolyn, on February 24th when I announced the phone number, or March 3rd, the day the results came in, one of those 2 days, Carolyn called in out of the blue and complained that I'd used her phone number. That's pretty funny. Do you remember hearing that, Chad? Do you remember which day it was?
No, I don't remember what day that was.
Okay, so well, maybe we should take a caller.
Just after we've just been steamrolled by your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knew what day that show was. You guys should go listen to it, but apparently we don't.
Hey. Yeah, if anybody wants to, email me and I'll send them my timeline. If you don't have my timeline, you can go listen to 4 years of this stuff. It is actually pretty incredible in the long run. What went on there? We had actual Xenocrity happening with Mike just improvising music and then syncing in with what we were talking about with the caller. Everybody, the majority of the station were convinced that we, and accused us of being liars because they thought we pre-recorded it. They did not believe that it was live.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like we were in an invisible environment. Like, real art is invisible. Just people can't. It goes into public incredulity. We were a total phenomenon of public incredulity. And yet, occasionally a journalist would come by and interview me, and I'd be in a magazine. I remember one interview, I recommended that we assassinate Barbara Frum, who was the Walter Cronkite of Canada.
For those of you just tuning in now, please take your seats. Sit down. Fasten your seatbelts. Fucking, like, get a drink.
Yeah. So do we have any other callers?
No,
you're the only one that showed up because he didn't actually know what the show was about.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't know to stay away. Chad, what did the in-quick messages? We got any comments?
No comments.
Edgar says, Edgar, location Double View. Bob is Orpheus tuning the universe.
Very
is
good. If you go.
Is that code for Morpheus or Orpheus? Or is that what he's saying?
Is that what?
Is what he means Morpheus or is that?
No, Orpheus. Now you go to the addenda section of howionic.com, and I think the last entry, the 31st, 32nd entry, is Orpheus. It's titled Orpheus. And you'll hear McLuhan talking about how Orpheus, everybody knew before technology, early technology came along, that Orpheus tuned the whole world through his music. It was acoustic space, not visual space. And Marshall talks about that, the role of Orpheus, and then says that we now can return, we can be like Orpheus and tune the whole world. And he was implying that it was already being done. you know, through the White House and all that. And, of course, that's what the Secret Council 10 did. So this guy is totally accurate. That's what I mean. Yes, I'm neo-Orphan.
And then Ion continues and completes that tuning of the universe and actually lays out formulas for tuning the universe.
Right. He completes that. He completes McLuhan.
Great. Oh, there's an inquick from Matthew in New Jersey. Bob must show
that's Matthew Rose. That's Matthew Rose, Jed. That's Matthew Rose. He's moved back from Venice. I was talking to him or something the other day, and he's back where he's, you know, where he used to live when he was paranoid. So he failed as James predicted. James predicted. James met him in August of 2009 when we were on my way to Europe. Remember Matthew? He was there, James, and you predicted he wasn't going to stay long in L.A.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, I
know.
He had too much slack or fake slack or ionizing.
No, I tried to tell him. I told him over the phone. I said, look, you want to get into show business here? Listen, buddy, you're going to get your throat slit right away. That's how it works.
It's like going to jail, James. It's like going to jail. You're going to get raped right away.
If you get in that business, look, you better have lube and know that you bought the lube first, and it's your fault.
And so what does Matthew Rose say to us? As Ion often says, greased up.
Wow, so he went back. That's interesting.
Yeah, so what's he say, Chad?
His message is, Bob must show his birth certificate if he is claiming to be president.
That's the East Coast mind. That's the bureaucratic mind. Here we're doing this phenomenal, colossal clairvoyance, and the guy wants me to show my birth certificate. Now, that's the little man talking there.
Yeah.
Matthew, birth certificates are made fake every day at CIA. Well, you can't rely on birth certificates.
Yeah.
I think it's funny in general that people still rely on signatures, on checks and things, as some sort of validation. Like, what is this, 1840?
Right.
Well, okay, no, you know what that is? It is 1840. Just as the Middle East Arabs want to get back to the feudal religion world that they're part of, they hate the modern technology, America is fundamentalist on the techno level of hoiking up the old visual space, like the signature. That is a kind of techno-fundamentalism. Same retrieval of something from the 19th century, because they can't handle the onslaught of Ion. I used to say under electric conditions, but now it's under ionic conditions is what's happening.
Yeah, like Matthew's going back to an old archetype of...
American archetype. It's an American archetype.
Pardon?
It's an American archetype. It's the archetype within the mean genes of America's culture, of America's character. They were the only country ever built on the printing press and public opinion. So that they are going to go back to their essence that they think they have, of the old ancient archetype, and preserve that to the point of going to war over it, just like the Arabs will preserve their religion in relation to the android meme. You know, so having your signature and using it is an American form of suicide bombing.
Yeah, good. Good one, Bob.
And James has been on the radio for 3 or 4 years warning people, stop killing yourself by signing those papers or even reading them.
Yeah. Right. So Deb in Idaho says, Bob is amazing. What a God creator. Thanks for Ion and all. James, thanks for your laugh. You know, I'm laughing because, like, as I hear this unroll here, I can hear, my relationship with Boert, a lot of the missing stuff that I, between the two of you, that all, now I can understand what the hell he was talking about.
Yeah, it fills in the words, the silent questions between you and Walter, the subvocalings, like, what? I know Walter's...
Yeah, because I'd ask him, I said, so who is this guy? And he goes, I don't know. Well, what's he do? I don't know. What do you mean you don't fucking know? You know him. What does he do? And, like, we yell and scream about this, and then he'd say you're a dick, and then the next minute you're a genius.
Oh, listen, James, how much time we got? A minute?
25 seconds.
I'll just say this and maybe we can carry it up. You remember you interviewed Douglas Rushkoff once or twice, James?
Yeah.
Well, he, in my academic interview, he wrote a defense of it, and he called me a genius / schizophrenic.
Yep. Perfect. All right, we'll be back.
Okay. You come in, check my time. You got fornication crimes. I've seen you dead from television. Child by time, separation is divine. Here is a strike beneath your knees. And they all want to love the cause, 'cause they all need to be the cause. AchieveRadio.com.
Hey everyone, this is James Martinez. You know, it has been months since RNA Drops have been open to the public on the market. And today, there is no doubt this product will change your world forever. I'd like to give special thanks to its creators, Ion, Dr. Carolyn Dean, and Bob Nevitt for bringing this to the public. And I'm very pleased to announce the continued success of RNA Drops. Today, tomorrow, and the next day, you're going to hear even more positive testimonials from all over the world. Included in the positive results of these products is that of Renew and Realign. For further details, go to jamesmartinezrnadrops.com. That's jamesmartinezrnadrops.com. Feel free to listen to the 2 hours of testimonials. And many of you know already, this is a special time for the world. And now it's your special time. Join us and participate in the greatest product to hit the market ever. You heard it right. I said ever. Tell your friends, tell your family, take your life, and take your power back. JamesMartinezRNADrops.com.
You can help those affected by countless crises around the world each year by supporting the American Red Cross International Response Fund, which will provide immediate relief and long-term support through supplies, technical assistance, and other support to those in need. To make a contribution, contact the American Red Cross today. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org. That's 1-800-